While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to our listeners joining us from across the country and beyond our borders. Thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM, the home of insightful conversations and meaningful national dialogue. I'm your host, Dafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Radio News Analysis. It's Wednesday, the 21st of January, 2026, and the time is 4 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. Now, as the week unfolds, Namibia continues to navigate a complex and evolving national landscape. Institutions, communities, and households alike are responding to shifting social, economic, and governance realities that define this moment in the country's journey. Now, across Namibia or across the nation, public conversations is increasingly focused on governance and accountability, infrastructure and service efficiency, community well-being and economic resilience, as well as national stability. Now, these themes continue to shape public confidence, policy direction, and the broader national outlook as the year gains momentum. Welcome to On The Radio News Analysis, your trusted source for the latest developments in Namibia and beyond. Now, right here, we deliver comprehensive news coverage, breaking stories, and in-depth analysis that places context at the center of every headline. Now, through our website, that is our live website, our Eagle FM app, we provide real-time updates on current affairs, politics, business, technology, health, and community issues, ensuring you remain informed wherever you are. From 1300 hours to 1430 Monday through Friday, we bring you credible voices, expert insights, and journalism that doesn't just report events, it also examines their impact. So today's program looks at key national and regional developments shaping the day, including public health matters, infrastructure, housing pressures, economic performance indicators, and community safety dynamics. And what does development mean for Namibians planning ahead? You can tune in all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the website, or download the Eagle FM app and join in on the conversation by subscribing to our WhatsApp channel for breaking news, discussions, and audience polls. All you have to do is send a text message to 081-200-4144 to join in on our WhatsApp channel. Now, this is On The Reading News Analysis, your reliable news partner. Let's pause here now and get right into our conversation.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
Welcome back. Now, since it's a beginning of the year, we're still in January. We're talking education matters to keep you well informed and educated, giving you the right knowledge at the very right time. Now, Ongwediva Achievers Private Center offers the 2026 program to boost grade 11 NSSCO results, targeting learners needing subject upgrades for university entry. Now, we are joined telephonically by Ms. Anatangwe Itembu, Bridging Coordinator at the Ongwediva Achievers Private Center, to help me discuss the program's flexible options, subjects, and application processes for interested learners in Namibia's Oshana region, and of course, beyond and those nearby. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Itembu, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Ms. Happy.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for having me.
Indeed. Pleasure is all mine. Now tell us, what is the Ongwediva Achievers 2026 NSSCO's Boost Program?
Okay, thank you very much for the question. Ongwediva Achievers Private Center is actually an accredited center by the Ministry of Education,
mm-hmm.
where we offer students with grade 11 subjects that they can then improve, and then once they upgrade, then they then can actually go back to the institutions of higher learning to then be able to actually register for the programs.
Interesting. And what are those particular subjects that students or learners can improve on?
Okay. The subjects that we are offering, we are actually offering a wide variety of different fields, like from science, from social, and then also economics. So we have English as a second language. They can upgrade their biology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, agricultural science, geography, development studies, which also then includes accounting, business studies, and economics, to mention a few.
Okay, interesting. How does this program support learners to actually achieve those goals or their goals?
Okay, this program is designed as a full-time center, or even though it's referred to as a part-time center. We give mm-hmm. classes Monday to Friday, which is then starting from 8 o'clock until the afternoon. So for this, we are saying that it's going to be helpful because most of the students, they don't get a chance to sit back with their tutors and teachers face-to-face and have more time. We are going to give them more time, whereby we are going to give them very much attention individually. As our ratio rate per teacher is a bit low also,
mm-hmm.
to then enable and also ensure that we give or we have enough attention for each and every student or learner to see. So that, and then we have qualified teachers, just to add to that also. We also have more dedicated tutors and teachers that will then give attention to the learners.
Okay. Mr. Itembu, what are the application steps and what are the costs involved?
Okay, so our application started last year in December and it's still ongoing. And it's actually going to end on the 30th of this month. So we are actually emphasizing or actually then electing our parents to come in and then register their students while there's still space. And then how to register, we have our forms. They are the campus itself here in Ongwediva. Just it's located this side of the roadblock, just opposite AMTA, of the other side of the road,
mm-hmm.
where the CCN buildings at the Oshiko location. And then if you collect the application form, you can then get, go pay the 150 for the form. Then you do applications, you attach the copy of ID and then also then the credentials of the grade 12 of the student, of the learner. And then from there, they get the admissions immediately. So from, if now in to say, that, let's say for instance, the parent is actually, not, you know, Ongwediva, a bit far maybe,
mm-hmm.
then they can actually call my number, which is then 081-65-15-138, to then request for their form. I can send it via either email or via WhatsApp so that then they can do application and then they scan back everything, the copies of the form and then also the copy of the certified copies of the ID and then also the grade 11 or 12, all grade 12 certificates so that then we can then register them or apply or admit them into then the center for then their spaces also. That is then if we want to accelerate the meta, the application, sorry. And then, yeah, I think that is
okay.
What do you have there?
Ms. Aitembo, kindly repeat that cell phone number again, please.
Okay, my cell phone number is 081-6515-138. So you can either call me or you can actually also just send me a message via WhatsApp directly to then request for the application form. Then I will definitely reply on that.
For some may be wondering, why choose Ongwediva Achievers over other centers?
Okay. The reason why you have to choose Ongwediva Achievers, we are affiliated with Welvetia University. As we all know, the most dedicated and then also successful university in Namibia, one of them. And then we are saying that we are actually, what is the word? I'm looking for the perfect word. We are actually then drive to actually be successful and make sure that our learners have upgraded their points so that they can then be able to meet their minimum requirements for the year 2027.
Interesting. Okay. Who then actually qualifies to come to Ongwediva Achievers?
Okay. Who all the learners that have written their grade 10 and they want to now do grade 11. We are talking about all-time grade 12, which is then called the old grade 12, which they also then want to upgrade their points to meet the minimum requirements to join the institutions. We are looking at the new grade 11 students that have actually then didn't make it. I don't want to use the word fail because there's no failure when it comes to education. Mm-hmm. You just need to learn, relearn, and then again unlearn. So that is what we are looking at. So even students that have failed last year, mostly they have to come and then they upgrade their points so that they can then be able to then and have the minimum or meet the minimum requirements for the institutions.
Okay. When can classes be expected to start for learners and parents who are also interested?
Okay. So we, as we know, with upgrading of this grade 11, ordinary level, it's a two-year course, supposed to start from grade 10 until grade 11. So that's why we have to start as early as possible. We have planned to start our classes at the, on the 2nd of February. That is when we are going to commence, so that we engage ourselves into a very much hardworking and then also very busy year, whereby we have to push these learners to make sure or to ensure that they have actually covered the whole syllabus before they sit for their final examination.
Okay. Mr. Natangwe Tembu, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading is Analysis.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Abby, for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ready to boost your NCCCO grade 11 results? Well, contact Ongwediva Achievers, a private center today at +64 +264 81 65 15 138. That is +264 81 65 15 138 or Ongwediva Achievers private center at www.u.edu.na. That is Ongwediva Achievers Private Center at www.edu.na. Unlock university future now.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
You're still tuned into On the Reading News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. We'll see you right after the commercial break. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. The Minister of Urban and Rural Development, James Sankwasa, has issued a stance warning to regional and local authorities against the misuse of public funds, stressing that resources allocated for infrastructure and development are often diverted for personal benefit. Speaking at the official opening act of the local and regional authorities induction training in Rundu on Monday, Sankwasa said such practices undermine service delivery, development and public confidence in government institutions. The five-day workshop runs from the 19th to the 23rd of January 2026. And I quote, some regional and local authorities have become ATMs for known tenders, which must stop immediately, Sankwasa said, expressing frustration over mismanagement and corruption that continue to plague councils across the country. Sankwasa reminded councillors and administrative officials of their responsibility under the Local Authorities Act, Regional Councils Act, and State Finance Act, emphasizing that misused funds must be recovered and those responsible held personally liable. Compliance and negligence in governance cannot be tolerated, he warned. Officials who cause financial damage to government institutions will be required to compensate the state. Let's take a listen to the Honorable Minister.
And then now all those councillors are now out. Now we have new councillors, which we are also...
Before we get to that, he further emphasized that moving forward, regional and local authorities will be held strictly accountable for delivering essential services, including housing, clean water, sanitation to residents. Public funds are meant for projects that improve people's lives, not for personal gain or political expendience, the minister said. Sankwasa also directed all institutions with outstanding municipal bills to settle them during the 2026-2027 financial year, warning that failure to comply will result in enforced service disconnections. He added that councillors who owe their local authorities will have their debts deducted directly from their allowances. If we can run to be councillors to avoid paying for municipal services or believed election exempts us from settling bills, that is very unfortunate, he cautioned, urging chief executive officers to ensure all debts are cleared. Sankwasa reminded office bearers that local authorities are instruments of governance, not political platforms. While councillors may have entered through political parties, they are not party functionaries once sworn in. Party politics must remain outside the councillors' chambers, he said. The minister urged participants to promote integrity and transparency within their institutions, noting that the ministry will closely monitor compliance with financial and governance regulations. We must lead with solutions, not excuses, Sankwasa stated. It cannot be business as usual. And now let's take a listen to our reporter Anakleta Haikera. She speaks on the matter, and then we hear from James Sankwasa himself.
And then now all those councillors are now out. Now we have new councillors, which we are also happy about.
Mm.
But then the struggle still continues. So now I'm wondering, did the ministry put anything aside perhaps to say if this issue is going to continue, the water shortage, what is going to happen to the new council that is there?
You see, the ministry did not put anything aside because
certain things are happening, not because of money, lack of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening because of lack of skill or competence. Let me take the first example. When I came here that time, there was no water for 2 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Kavango River is not dry. The water is flowing. Now, when I gave that instruction by 8 o'clock, I want an answer.
Mm-hmm.
People went into the system. They found that it was just a blocked pipe. Nothing technical.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing technical. Now, what is there for the ministry to put aside?
Yes.
A blocked pipe does not need a budgetary approval.
Mm-hmm.
Does not need an engineer. Simply, simple maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
So maintenance now calls upon the capacity of the CEO and the councillors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my answer to your question.
Yeah.
See, because the Zambezi, the Kavango River has not dried up.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the town that's on the bank of the river dry?
Mm-hmm.
And these people that are councillors are also citizens and the residents of the same town. Do they themselves have water?
Mm-hmm.
If they do, how? If they don't have water, why are they happy? That's my concern. So it's a question of capacity, as far as I'm concerned. Not monetary issues that are there, no. The capacity, the will to solve those problems.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is going to happen to those councillors who are going to show incompetent skills, especially this year?
If you are competent, you go. You are incompetent. Why did you apply for a job you cannot take executive? Why? You know that I cannot take this job. Why did you apply for it? Why did you stand and tell people to vote for you to bring development? Well, you know, don't even know what I'm talking about. So as I said, the answer itself is with the councillors, not with the minister. The minister is not appointed to fire councillors. That's not my duty. But the minister is appointed to monitor the performance of councillors. Their performance is their own individual responsibility. I only expect results. As promised to the electorate.
Okay, now we listen to James Sankwasa as he was speaking at the gathering.
Those who might know, I'm a younger generation. And this chapter says, a wicked man accepts a bribe in secret to prevent the cause of justice. A wicked. When you do this, you know very well you are wicked. You are wicked. What is this? Proverbs chapter 17, verse 23. A wicked man, or a woman in this case, who accepts a bribe in secret to prevent the cause of justice. We are duty bound to avoid corruption in all its manifestations, be it in recruitment, promotions, procurement of goods and services. When it comes to staff management and recruitment, I must emphasize here, it's a disappointing thing to see Namibia going back to public studies. Because that's exactly what we are doing right now. We are dealing with public studies. Before independence, the Kavango government says, then it came Kavango administration, Kaprivi government says, then Kaprivi administration, or Bambo, then whatever. What you have changed is not the character of the administration, but the change in the Senate. Hello? What is changing is the Senate, not the character. So as a result, even if you apply from elsewhere, if you're not from Gabon, you can't qualify. If you're not from Zambia, you can't qualify. So the CRO, the directors must all be from that region. Including even our governors. According to the basis. Where is one Namibia, one nation? Where is it? Why do we want Namibia many nations? Why? Before independence, we had this bad stance.
and we fought against it. We were prepared to die for it. Someone even died to change that scenario. We are now independent. We are back to Pakistan, so where the poor are trying. Is this what I said? Was the apartheid government right when they put us in our tribal cacophonies? And we said we didn't want it. Now we think it was very comfortable to go there. Even our politics get aligned in that line. And who is sponsoring this? To find the people who is the political party, he is poor as me. I was asked whether this person gets the man for the night. We realize it's external funding, to destroy the country. I have on the basis of prudent financial management, this approved many trips. Where most of the people travel, I think that.
Let's pause here now and make room for a scheduled commercial break. Why pay more when you can pay less at USave stores? 2 kilograms real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only $109.99. 5 kilos top score super maize meal, $62.99. 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread brick, just $13.99. And pay $34.99 for 750 grams U-brand original mayonnaise. USave, where good food costs less.
Don't you guys know I'm a gender decision? Some people say I will be fired because they refuse to do their own thing. So people are saying, well, okay, we hold our chief leader officer as our chief executive officer accountable for financial management. And now I must address that we should keep executive officer. Because you are very complacent in this issue. You know that this trip or this expenditure is not correct in terms of the law. But because you think if I tell the counselor the only thing, they are not going to renew my contract. They are going to fire me. No regional officer, no accounting officer will be fired because they refuse to do their own thing. Not one, but I'm still here. Go out there and do your job according to the law. Laws and regulations that are not the functional laws. We should not, as the political leaders, try to be officials, you know, officials. Try to maintain the officials, which dismiss up. If you don't do this, you don't do this. Ah. They have applied for a job. They said they are having this qualification. They have this experience. And on that basis, we satisfy the appointed. And I must also explain that not a single chief executive officer of the local authority or the chief regional officer of the director of the local is going to the public and say, I want to be appointed to develop you. Not one. It's us as politicians who went and say, I want to bring development, so bring it. Let's bring it. Yes. We should not be drawing to this project. That is more reason why I need to claim the theme of the government. Accountability is the bedrock for effective governance. To achieve effective safety in the regional local authority council. It must be accountable first and foremost. You need to answer for your actions and for the decision you take. When you take it out action, and the Sankwasa the minister is breaking that.
And with that, let's pause here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we'll be back with more news right here on the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
Eye.
Welcome back. You are still tuned into On the Reader News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM. Of course, trust us to bring you the news that keeps you well informed and well engaged. Now, of course, today is Wednesday, and that means today's The Villager e-paper is out. Now, do subscribe to receive your tri-weekly dose of economic and social news right through our WhatsApp channel, that is The Villager newspaper. Now, today's headlines: Patience Motsepe, a man on a mission to commercialize African football. Namibia primed for renewable adoption, IRENA. Public funds for projects, not personal gains, Sankwasa. Farmer generates approximately 40,000 Namibian dollars annually from guava sales. Namibia seeks to work with the UAE on climate initiatives. 4-year water softening and treatment technologies program completed. $6 billion domestic market exists for fruits and vegetables. Agri inflation rose by 3.67% year on year. IUM, empowering students for global impact and social change. To grab your copy to read up on this social and economic news, absolutely free of charge. Now remember, The Villager e-paper is out every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. All you have to do is send a text message to 081-200-4144. That is on WhatsApp to subscribe. And now for other news. A Parliament Standing Committee on Gender Equality, Health and Social Services has conducted an oversight visit to capital projects under the Ministry of Health and Social Services in the Otsesonjoba region, assessing infrastructure conditions and service delivery standards at selected health facilities. Now, during the visit to Kalk Verde Clinic, committee members expressed strong satisfaction with the facility's overall state, particularly its high standards of cleanliness and hygiene. This were noted to be significantly better than conditions observed at some larger facilities in the region. The clinic is said to be managed by a young professional nurse whose leadership, dedication and commitment to community service were highlighted by the committee. Now, despite facing daily operational challenges, the clinic staff were commended for their continued efforts to provide quality healthcare services to the Kalk Verde community and surrounding areas. In contrast, the committee raised serious concerns regarding conditions at Otjiwarongo State Hospital, noting an urgent need for management intervention. Particular attention was drawn to shortcomings in cleanliness and hygiene, which were identified as requiring immediate corrective action to ensure patient safety and acceptable healthcare standards. The committee indicated that its findings would inform further engagement with the Ministry of Health and Social Services with the aim of strengthening oversight, improving facility management, and enhancing service delivery across the region. Caught up with chairperson of the Standing Committee on Gender, Health and Social Services, that is Nono Kachingisua. Let's take a listen to that conversation. A very good afternoon to you, Honorable Nono, and welcome to On the Reader News Analysis.
Yeah, good afternoon. And hello, Namibia, and the listeners.
Yeah. Now, we understand that the Parliament Standing Committee on Gender Equality and Social Services is making some site visits or oversight visits in the Ministry of Health and Social Services capital projects in the Otjojo-Ndjupa region. Kindly go through with what exactly the Standing Committee has been doing and the perhaps also the findings, ma'am.
Yes, thank you very much for the question. The Parliamentary Standing Committee on Gender Equality, Health and Social Welfare has the constitutional mandate to exercise parliamentary oversight on activities and programs of offices. It can be also the ministries, it can be agencies and state-owned enterprises. Now, in Otjojo-Ndjupa, we came to visit, to pay a visit on capital projects, which derive from a committee meeting decided to for us to be here from the 19th up to the 30th of January to visit all clinics, health centers, and district hospitals, and so on. Now, our main objective of this oversight is to scrutinize whether the government policies, programs, and projects have been implemented. We want to know what's going on the ground. We, the parliamentarians, we approved the budget. We have the book, which is called MPES. This is now where we find this budget of the capital projects. And after approving it, we should also know, did this happen? Was it? Was the approval made to build or to upgrade or to renovate? Was it done?
Yeah. So
it's why we came here, to make sure that everything is in order and our oversight over the executive work, it's also done.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, when such findings, when certain findings, or before I get to that, are there specific findings also that you found that are of a particular concern, or perhaps very good findings that perhaps you would then think need to be rolled over to other regions as well?
Yes, for now, it's too early to mention some findings.
Okay.
Because it's the beginning, we were only in three places. But at the end of this month, we will be able to report back to you what the findings are and how we can also make sure that other regions can take that example or do it the same. Because we are now in Grootfontein, yes, but here we could not visit the capital projects, but there are others to be visited, like in Mangeti or Matako Clinic. Mangeti is a clinic also.
Okay.
And other places like Oshituo Clinic and so on. So for now, we cannot say many, because also, as per our rules, the report belongs to the committee. So for us here, it's only to gather the information and then report back to the committee. What after the committee will receive, they will approve it and then take it to the Standing Rules and Order, which is the highest decision-making body in Parliament. And from there, it will be taken to Parliament to be open to every member or every person in Namibia to know it. The report will be open. And then members of Parliament will debate on it. The others who are not here also will be able to add or to approve it as it is. So it will be in Parliament for consideration and approval. And then from there, if it is approved in Parliament, it will be the Secretary of the National Assembly will send it to the Prime Minister's office to be distributed as per the recommendation to the different ministries. That is how Parliament is working.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Certainly, what is the purpose or usually of such visits? Is it to ensure that what has been put in place, or like you mentioned earlier about policies, and usually how long does this process take? But then also just get into the nitty gritties of what the purpose exactly is. And I've noticed that this is something that Parliament Standing Committee here and there usually visit places. But what are usually the purpose of such?
The purpose of visiting here is for site inspections. We should know and see what happened there. Was the project? If was there something built or upgraded or renovated as per the MTEF? The money which was budgeted for that thing or for that purpose. So that is now our purpose for being here, is for site inspections, and also to hear from the regional leadership, as they are the people between the central government and the people on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So they should explain now to us how they handle that. When is the tender? When was the tender advertised? And we are going deeper.
Mm-hmm.
When should they finalize? And if it is not finalized, what did they do? So we are here to know exactly in every corner of the ministry what they have done with that budget, which was budgeted for the specific project.
Mm-hmm.
So. After we see, we just question them or have inquire them on what they are having. But as I have already mentioned, that this is not for us. This is for the committee who sent us. And then we should report back as what we have said, what we have seen. So we are walking around here, and we will make sure that everything should be in order.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go back to report. Mm-hmm. Actually, a bit which I can report now is that we were in Oshuarongo.
Mm-hmm.
At the district hospital, but it was not fine because we could not get answers as per our request. A bit disappointed by the leaders because every question we posed was referred to the leader of the hospital or the Ministry of Health,
yeah,
which is the director. And by the time the director was not there, he was on leave. And then someone was also put there to act or to receive us, but the person was also not there. And then when we later he joined us, but he could not also accompany us. So that was a bit of a disappointment, but we were later given someone to be with us. But we went to Otavi after Oshuarongo, and then here we are now in Grootfontein. But really, I should thank Grootfontein. We were received warmly.
Mm-hmm.
The place is clean, and all what we wanted, we were given. This is now especially about questioning what is happening there.
Yeah.
So here, it was good. Now, tomorrow we'll go to Tumkwe and so on, because it's a long program, as I have already mentioned,
mm-hmm.
that is from the 19th up to the 30th. So we still have to go. But we hope that the leader of the Ministry of Health, which is the director, will join us later, because it's still long.
Yeah.
We are patient, we will wait, so that we can work together as the three organs of the state.
Mm.
We have the executive, we have the legislature, we have the judiciary now. The two now, here the executive and legislature is what now meeting.
Mm.
So we hope that everything will be in order so that we can finish our mission. And then this is not only for us, it's for the benefit of the nation.
Of course.
If you have a hospital which is having everything equipped with medicine, pharmacies in order, and everything, dialysis and so on, X is working, we will have a healthy nation and everything will work smoothly. A person who is working in agriculture will have nicely work because of that the body is healthy.
That's
so
true.
Health is very important to us and we should keep it as a need in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Correct. Now, in the case where negative findings are found and somebody has to be held accountable, perhaps funds, just as an example, so to say, perhaps let's say funds were allocated for a certain project in the health ministry and it wasn't executed as precisely it is supposed to be, then do are those people then held accountable? And yeah, just then how does the process go? And how long does it even take to hold them accountable?
Yes. If you are the one who were responsible for that certain project or tender or something, you will be held responsible. You will have to answer on questions. But Parliament, it's having the powers to subpoena the person and to bring before a committee and to question the person. And through that, is where the process will go further. If the findings is brought back to Parliament, and Parliament will also take a decision where what to do. That is how we are working. So there is nothing which will go wrong. If someone has stolen money or things were not done according to the plan, there are rules, there are laws to keep this person accountable. So the nation should be know or be aware that Parliament is on and they are doing a good job so that we all can benefit. One of our responsibilities is to eradicate poverty, except for visiting projects. Project is also our responsibility. Now, when you want to eradicate poverty, people will wonder, are you economic committee? No, we are not.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to keep the nation in a healthy situation. We have to have clean hospitals. We have to have clean clinics. We have to have medicine in our clinics. We have to have nurses in our hospitals. The human resource, we should make sure that they are having shift. They feel good in their work, there is no stress and there is no oppression on them, so that we can all have a healthy nation and good progress to the whole Namibia.
Honorable Nono, I think before I do let you go, I would want to know whether the public themselves, knowing that Parliament Standing Committee, or if they so happen to come to the hospital and then notice that there's delegates from Parliament who have been assigned to come and do oversights, are they perhaps allowed to engage with officials and also perhaps give suggestions or air their grievances, or how does that work?
This is more with the technicians, technocrats, the people inside the offices. For the community, it's also open for them to write to us if there is a complaint. The Parliament is an open entity to all, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So when we came with these trips, we are coming for a certain people. But if you have something you want to share with us, it's open for us to listen. But in that meeting, you will not be allowed because it's arranged for a certain people. But
mm-hmm.
for you, if you want to inform us, like, for example, we were at the hospital in Oshiwarongo, and then we met some patients who came early in the morning, and by that time, I think it was around four or five, but they were still sitting there. So then they came to us. We did not send them back to say that, no, you cannot meet us. We listen, and then we take it also up. So for those who are hearing us or knowing that they are seeing us as parliamentarians in the hospital.
Mm.
It's fine if you have something to add to us, what you think the hospital should change. You bring that paper or you talk to us if there is time, and then we can take it up and put it also in the report, and your recommendations will be heard, and we will do a proper job to everyone, because the community is not only for some certain things. When we say Ministry of Health, and then it is the entire ministry, from the clinic, from inside itself, from the bed, from the laundry in the hospital, the food and everything. So it's why even the patients, when they feel that, no, I want to write a letter to this committee, it is open to them. So I'm also inviting them to come to us and share with us what they are having, but also not only the bad side, the good side also, because as I alluded to that today, we came to a clean hospital and well organized also. Everything of the doctor was well explained, and then even the money they had used, it was on paper with the head of the administration. So you could see that here is a good job. So now with that, is we will also have a good job if the structures in place will have a good job. So the community, you are welcome. It's open for you to communicate to us.
Yeah.
And when you see us traveling and being at your places, it's open also to greet us, and then we can exchange whatever we have to say, that maybe you can call later or where to meet also. But we are, myself, I'm 24 hours on duty, and I have already gave myself to the community to say that I will work for them. Article 45 of the Namibian Constitution is telling us that we are elected members. So now when you are elected, you are representing people where you are. Mm. So representing people means you are that person. So you have to put yourself in her or his shoes when there is a complaint or something like that.
Interesting.
So that's why it's open. Communicate to us also.
Thank you so much, Ms. Nono, for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. We do appreciate your insights with us, and we wish you all the best with the rest of your site visits.
Thank you very much, and you are welcome anytime.
And there you had it from Parliament Standing Committee on Gender Equality, Health and Social Services, a chairperson, Nono Kachingisua. Okay. And with that being said, let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, you are tuned into On the Radar News Analysis. We'll be back with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia, we always start off regionally, then move over to continental news. Thereafter, we bring you some international news. To start off in South Africa, as South Africa seeks UK extension on $1 billion US dollar green energy guarantee amid funding delays. Let's take a listen to that.
European countries and the U.S. pledged $8.3 billion towards the Just Energy Transition Partnership, agreed back in 2021. But South Africa is struggling to access financing, even as key guarantees are near expiry. Officials say the problem is not a lack of money, but a lack of projects ready to absorb it.
Not enough pipeline coming through to match with the finance that is available. So that is one of the big things that we are currently facing.
Beyond coordination challenges, South Africa's high debt levels are also limiting access to concessional climate finance.
A country like South Africa, more about the quality of the finance, right? South Africa, like many other countries, has got a high debt, right? And when you are servicing the debt, it takes away the space for you to provide things like guarantees, because some of these concessional finances require guarantees. So the cost of capital is something that really needs to change for countries that are like South Africa that just need access. Currently, it is unaffordable for many developing countries that are highly indebted, and South Africa is no exception.
Experts involved in project implementation argue the problem runs deeper, pointing to weak long-term planning and a mismatch between funder expectations and realities on the ground.
I think the issue is, from South African perspective, we have been having challenges in terms of planning for long-term aspects. And because of that, I think from the international perspective, the funders should understand that this is an issue. It is a pilot, if you may call it that. And by that virtue, give us longer horizon investments. So not say that, okay, your investment pledge is going to end by the end of this year if we don't use it, but understand, you know, because even in projects, you see that there's challenges in terms of implementing it.
South African government is negotiating with the UK for an extension while also engaging other countries. But some experts are concerned that there is a mismatch in terms of grant funding going to research instead of bankable projects. While more than 160 community-backed projects have been identified in Mpumalanga, the epicenter of the just energy transition, many failed to meet investor requirements.
In my view, from the perspective of the different projects that we actually have, there is a little bit of a gap in terms of what would be bankable or fundable from the investor perspective to what we actually have. And I think that's the challenge that we're grappling with. And that's where funders are not necessarily focusing on, in terms of how do we actually change the story and shorten the gap and then, you know, fund that specific aspect so that they can eventually give financing to those projects. And it could be debt financing, loan financing, or in whatever form. But we're not thinking about using the grant funding for that aspect.
On a global level, South Africa continues to push for fairer climate finance rules, but is being cautioned to reassess project readiness on home soil. Hundreds of viable projects have been identified but are not being developed because most of the grant money received thus far is going towards research and to strategy as opposed to project development. Experts say that a pipeline of scalable projects will unlock further financing and get the ball rolling on the just energy transition. Sumitra Nadu, CGTN, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, UNDP boosts resettlement services with ICT equipment in Zambia.
The resettlement division has been working under pressure, grappling with limited resources as it supports displaced persons and refugees across the country. But today, that support received a boost. The United Nations Development Programme, UNDP, has handed over information and communication technology equipment and furniture worth 1.3 million kwacha to the resettlement division. The equipment is aimed at improving efficiency and strengthening service delivery in resettlement areas. Vice President Mutale Nalumango says the support will go a long way in improving coordination and service provision for settlers.
If you have visited the offices of resettlement in the different provinces, you would see why we appreciate this gift to the division of resettlement. It's a very, very important division in our government and in the office of the Vice President.
She says strengthening public institutions is key to ensuring vulnerable communities receive timely and quality services.
By digitizing operations, improving record management, and strengthening communication systems, this equipment is expected to enhance processing of land documents and applications. It will also reduce turnaround times and administrative bottlenecks, as well as improve coordination between provincial offices and headquarters.
The Vice President has thanked cooperating partners for complementing government's efforts, saying that such support helps bridge critical gaps in service delivery. Meanwhile, UNDP Country Representative James Wakiaga says the handover is a practical step towards strengthening the operational capacity of the Resettlement Division.
It is intended to improve coordination, records management, reporting and communication in support of resettlement programs across the country.
The equipment is expected to benefit over 30,000 settlers under the development of basic infrastructure projects being implemented in Mayukwayukwa and Maheba. Rosemary Kamanga, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Zambia records highest historic grade 12 pass rate.
Siakalima has announced the 2025 grade 12 and teacher education examination results. A total of 197,777 candidates registered, representing an increase of 24,810 from 2024. Mr. Siakalima says the pass rate has improved to 70.26%, up from 68.19% in 2024. The education minister says the pass rate is unprecedented, as it is the first time that the country has reached the 70% pass mark.
When combined with the candidates from South Africa, a total of 136,434 candidates obtained the school certificate out of the 194,148 candidates that started the examination, showing an increase by 2.08 percentage points from 68.19% that obtained the school certificate in 2024. Further, a total of 54,771 candidates obtained statements, while only 2,941 candidates failed the examination, and the national absenteeism rate decreased by 0.15 percentage points from 1.98% in 2024 to 1.83% in 2025.
Mr. Siakalima notes that despite no leakages, there were 15 individuals and 21 whole center cases of suspected examination malpractice recorded during the 2025 school certificate examination, affecting a total of 1,007 candidates.
A total of 588 candidates have qualified for the award of teacher's diploma, comprising 159 candidates to graduate with early childhood education teacher's diploma, 239 candidates to graduate with primary teacher's diploma, and 190 candidates to graduate with secondary teacher's diploma. The diplomas will be awarded at the graduation ceremonies to be organized by the Ministry of Education through the Colleges of Education during the year.
And some teacher unions have welcomed the grade 12 results, attributing the improved pass rate to government's interventions to transform the country's education sector.
This is not a mere coincidence. It's because of a number of interventions that government has put in place. One such an intervention is the feeding program. It must be pointed out that as we speak, all the 116 districts, all the schools in Zambia, in short, are on the feeding program. So 70.26% at school certificate level is something that we need to be proud of, all of us. And it hasn't come by accident. It has come through investment in education on the part of government, the hard work that the teachers are putting in, as well as the dedication and commitment to education that the learners are showing.
Candidates can now access their results through the SMS results notification system, while the in-result slips will be available on the ECZ portal effective Monday, January 26, 2026. Sharon Siame, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Experts link southern African floods to climate and seasonal rains.
Speedboats bearing rescue teams have been combing the flooded plains across southern Mozambique, where surging waters have forced thousands to flee their homes, leaving some stranded on rooftops. The floods have directly impacted more than 620,000 people, with over 72,000 homes flooded and widespread damage to roads, bridges and health centers, according to the International Federation of the Red Cross.
We have rescued a lot of people in this risk zone and brought them to this site. We then take their details, we give them some food, and if they have family nearby, they go. If not, we fetch them by car to a resettlement camp that we have provided.
The South African National Defense Force has deployed a search and rescue team to assist in Mozambique, with more assets set to be deployed. The Mozambican government has also declared a red alert, turning for help to the UN, as several regions remain at risk from rising water levels.
Nearly 5,000 kilometers of roads have sustained damage across 9 provinces of Mozambique, with the main road connecting the capital, Maputo, to the rest of the country now inaccessible. Supply chain lines are significantly disrupted, and authorities report the loss of more than 27,000 heads of livestock. The government is leading the response. On Saturday, it formally requested UN support for search and rescue operations, preventative evacuations, damage assessment, and the provision of temporary shelters.
The crisis has forced Mozambican President Daniel Francisco Chapo to cancel his planned trip to Davos, where he was scheduled to attend the World Economic Forum this week. In neighboring Zimbabwe, authorities say the death toll from heavy rains and flooding has risen to 78 since the start of the rainy season in October. Over 60 have been injured and more than 1,000 homes damaged. Infrastructure has also been hit, including schools, health facilities and bridges. In South Africa, the death toll from flooding rose to 38 on Monday after more bodies were recovered overnight. The country declared a national disaster on Sunday as it ramped up its emergency response in Limpopo and Mpumalanga provinces. Devin Bidi, CGTN.
Right, for a deeper look into the extreme weather patterns in southern Africa, let's bring in Professor Jasper Knight. He is a professor of physical geography at the University of Witwatersrand and joins us from Johannesburg. Professor, thank you for joining us on the program. Just give us a brief explanation of what is driving this massive flooding we're seeing in Mozambique, South Africa and Zimbabwe.
Good afternoon to you. Well, of course, the reason behind the floods is heavy rainfall. And in southern Africa at this time of year, during the spring and early summer, we have seasonal rains. And this comes to us mainly from low pressure cells coming from the adjacent Indian Ocean. But this is a normal part of our climatology. But in this particular instance, we've had heavy rain coming from other types of weather systems called cutoff lows, which arise where we have moist air drawn down towards the land surface from the jet stream, and this gives rise to very intense rainfall. So here we have a critical combination of several climatological factors that have given rise to substantial rains over a relatively long time period, and that's essentially what's driven the flood risk right across southern Africa.
Right, and why has this persisted for so long? In some parts, this started as early as October last year.
Well, one important contributing factor is actually climate change. And the reason for this is that if we have warmer temperatures in the ocean and in the atmosphere, it can evaporate more water and give rise to more rainfall. It also gives rise to more erratic patterns of rainfall as well. And this is also something that is affecting the frequency of these storm events, especially in southern Africa. These things are becoming not just more common, they are becoming more erratic and heavy in their nature. And this increases flood risk.
Right. And let's talk specifically about Mozambique. The nation does seem to be getting hit quite often and very intensely. How do you explain this?
Well, first of all, it lies adjacent to the Indian Ocean. So this is going to be the first location where these low-pressure cells from the Indian Ocean hit the land. And also, of course, many parts of Mozambique are actually low-lying. So they're flat, they're adjacent to big rivers, and therefore they are at an increased risk of flooding. And this is an important contributing factor to the floods that are taking place in southern Mozambique at the moment.
Right. And finally, Professor, looking ahead here, what can we expect in the coming days in the region? Is this likely to get worse, or can we expect some relief soon?
Well, here we're coming out of the rainy season in the southern hemisphere. So over the next month or so, we should certainly anticipate that some of these storms should disperse. But of course, over time, the rivers are going to dry up. So the water level is going to fall. And this, of course, will affect aid efforts. So it will make it a little bit easier for these aid agencies, such as the Red Cross that was mentioned earlier, to actually get access to some of these cut-off villages and provide aid to distressed communities.
In our own World Economic Forum discussion, how can we unlock new sources of growth?
Well, let's try and get you a bit more on what we know is unfolding at Davos at this hour. That's at the World Economic Forum. There is a panel discussion speaking about global economic uncertainty, which of course is very pertinent at this hour, given just how many issues have come to the fore insofar as that is concerned. Let's listen in for a while, get you a sense of what the panelists there are saying.
If the lifetime is expected to be is 4 or 5 years, and then those chips can be used for cloud, then I think these investments are going to prove to be good investments. So I think it's going to be, you know, if the speed of technology changes and all these investments now, they're going to be, it's going to be challenged. But I agree with Ken. I think we don't know enough, but I'm personally very optimistic on how AI is going to affect the world economy.
Madam Lagarde, can I ask you a question to take on the issue that I think Ken raised, just about the amount of debt in the system today? Not talking about corporate debt, but sovereign debt. And the reason I ask is, back in the 1920s, at least in the United States, there was a budget surplus. I can believe there was actually a budget surplus in a lot of other countries as well. Not everywhere, of course. But today in the U.S., there's $38 trillion of debt. And the playbook that we all learned, actually, in the aftermath of 1929 is, what do you do when there's a crisis to stem it? You throw money at the problem. Ben Bernanke learned this and effectuated in 2008. We did it again during the pandemic. And the thing that I've always thought about is, the next time there is a panic of some sort, and there will be a pullback of some sort, whether the politicians say, well, we now have the playbook. We know what we're supposed to do. And we're going to write a check for $5 trillion because that's what we're supposed to do. Except that we keep wondering, is there some kind of invisible line in the bond market around the world that turns into a red line where the investor class says, we're not doing it anymore? And then you then, by the way, you get into sort of an austerity, vicious cycle.
Two things. I'm not going to address your question right away because I want to come back to a point that was made by both Larry and Ken, I think. And I'm not denying that investment in artificial intelligence can be extremely net positive and will deliver productivity gains, the amount of which is questionable, and you have a spectrum that is quite large as to how much it will deliver. But I think that to come back to my minimum cooperation needed for that, we also have to consider that it's capital intensive, energy intensive, and data intensive. And we have to be mindful of the three. In terms of energy intensity, what kind of energy is being used to manage data will matter. What the consequences will be on the people will matter as well. So I think that in this cooperation approach that we have, which will have to take care of data privacy, for instance, and preferences in different corners of the world, we also need to be mindful of the energy consumption and what kind of energy it is and what impact it has on climate. And number two, we have to be mindful of the consequences for people. Because unless, you know, we move in this dream world of Keynes, where working is a choice in a way, which I don't see on the medium-term horizon, we have to understand what consequences it has on people, unless we want to risk a dislocation of society. Now, I come back to your point. Yes, debt has increased massively and is increasing in some corners more than others. I think the real question is, what is done with that financing that the sovereigns are accumulating? Not all debts are the same. Debt that is invested in necessary productive projects or necessary for security purposes will always find people to finance it. That's my assumption. Debts that are not for productive purposes, that are not going to sustain growth on a sustainable basis, that will be far more difficult. So I'm not going to tell you that there is a red line. I'm not going to tell you that central banks will always be around either. But I think that the nature of the purpose for which debt is subscribed will matter more than the actual volume.
Speak to what you did. You just said something very interesting.
No, I'm
you
not
said,
going to speak more to it.
No to, no to the idea that central banks might not always be around. What did you mean by that?
Look, I went through my lot of crisis, as many of you have as well. And I remember the days when it was mentioned that, you know, central bankers are the only game in town. This is not the right approach to a balanced and durable equilibrium. Measures have to be taken by fiscal authorities. Reforms have to be undertaken. The purpose for which spending is organized has to be thought through, and the consequences on people if we want society to stay together.
Right. So just, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but are you basically saying that in our legislative branches around the world, we have abdicated responsibility of being fiscally prudent and thoughtful as to how we use society's resources and have become overly reliant upon central banks to continue to try to keep the economy going in the right direction against this onslaught of reckless spending?
I'm not suggesting it's the case now, but we have observed it in the past.
I mean, the historic irony is that when people talked about central banks being the only game in town in the 2010s, what they were actually urging is more active fiscal.
Kenya begins sales of a 65% stake in a state oil pipeline firm.
Heading to Kenya now, the country has started selling a 65% stake in its state oil pipeline firm, KPC. And that's as the government looks to raise $825 million in what will be East Africa's biggest ever initial public offering. Now, the sale is part of a privatization drive by President William Ruto. It involves divesting from state companies to raise funds for new infrastructure and sovereign wealth funds. It is also reducing its stake in telecoms operator Safaricom. The government has priced that IPO with KPC in Kenya, a pipeline company, at 7 US cents per share. The sale will run until February 19th, and the shares will be listed for trading on the Nairobi Securities Exchange on the 9th of March.
When we come up, when we talk about valuation, we are talking about a process that is fairly transparent, that is backed by methodologies. We certify experts within our firms, and also market sounding. That is, you know, informally actually reaching out to the market and trying to understand, you know, where the market will sit from a professional investor standpoint. Okay, and with that, then we submit a formal report to the governing organs of the transaction that would, ultimately approve our proposed valuation that is also reviewed by the Capital Market Authority of Kenya. So in a nutshell, it's been a process. But then again, looking at Kenya Pipeline Company, we're talking about a capital-intensive business, all right? And EV EBITDA, which is an enterprise valuation methodology, is what was used, looking at the free cash flow, because as you know, the lower you go to the bottom line, the higher the likelihood of manipulating earnings, you know, looking at the differences in accounting policies, but also the capital structure of these particular companies. Mm-hmm. We thought it would be important to look at an enterprise value methodology, and EBITDA really captures that. Okay, so the basis for setting the price is EV EBITDA, and then it means it's a relative valuation. Looking at peer companies, we looked at India and the developed markets, and then we looked at the median where they were trading at, and you adjust for the margin and growth because KPC is unique, And ultimately, I would say that this was actually offered a discount of those peers.
Mm. And very quickly, I just want to get a sense of what it was about this company that led you to that valuation. Is it when you propose it to investors, what is that value proposition?
The value proposition of KPC is sitting on many front. Mm. Because you have a mature asset. We're talking about 52 years of existence,
right.
Enjoying monopoly in this mm-hmm. country when it comes to pipeline business, which is now the transportation and the storage of fuel. You know, at times there's a confusion as to what exactly KPC does as a company. Mm-hmm. You know, you see people comparing it with our oil marketing companies, for instance, or even our KPLC or KenGen. But I will say that the uniqueness of this business is at the interface of energy and logistics, because pipeline business means they transport, they store, and we've seen high margin. This is a very high margin business. If you look at our companies operating locally, oftentimes we talk about KPLC, KenGen and others, the EBITDA margins are not what we've seen with KPC, all right? Because even in terms of net margins, the net margin of KPC standing at around 20%, on the financial year 2026 is right. Probably what you would talk about when you talk about EBITDA mm-hmm. for other firms. So really, to summarize for you, we're talking about a monopoly, we're talking about a mature asset, we're talking about high margin, and also growth prospect.
Right. And that's probably why analysts are saying there's going to be significant interest. Of course, this opened yesterday. I don't know what you've seen so far. But for retail and also institutional investors, there will be significant interest. I'd like to get a sense of how you're ensuring that the way this IPO is structured, there's a fair process to allow all investors access.
Excellent. That's a very good question, Uche. Thank you very much. To reaffirm that an initial public offer is a highly regulated process in our capital markets. This is a process regulated by the Capital Markets Authority. We are guided by the Public Offer Listing and Disclosure Regulation 2023, and specific to the Schedule 6 of those regulations, we are expected to make certain disclosures in what we call the information memorandum that has been released as at yesterday. And the transparency that is required in an initial public offer means that there is no preferential treatment to any investors. And right. For those reasons, the allocation policy across investor pool is a requirement. And if you look at the information memorandum, you'll find that information has been provided, to the general public, where we're talking about, allocating specific, percentages to specific categories of investors. I want to take the opportunity perhaps to talk about that particular allocation where we're saying the retail investors in this country, the local retail, have been allocated a pool of the 65% offer shares. We're talking about 20% allocated, to the local retail investors. Again, the same 20 is allocated to our local institutional investors. Okay. And then the oil marketing companies that are key stakeholders to KPC have been allocated 15%. Employees of KPC have been allocated, an investment pool of 5% of the 65%. And then we're also talking about the regional investors. As you know, KPC operates regionally with transit market, forming 52% of their revenue, Uganda being a significant part of that. So regionally, we've allocated 20% of the investment pool to our regional investors. And last but not least, the foreign investors have equally been allocated 20%. So just to summarize that, we're talking about, employees at 5%, the oil marketing companies at 15%. So those are the stakeholders. That makes it still the 20%. And everything else is fairly distributed, is fairly balanced. And that really calls for, a fair, transparent, equitable, and inclusive process.
President Xi Jinping calls for strong start to 15th five-year plan.
President Xi Jinping addressed provincial and ministerial level officials at the opening of a study session at the party school of the CPC Central Committee. She said five-year plans are a key feature of party governance and an institutional advantage of socialism with Chinese characteristics. He stressed that the plan's arrangements must be understood fully, deeply, and accurately. Xi said China faces both strategic opportunities and risks amid rising global uncertainty. He urged a comprehensive assessment that focuses on key variables, including the international situation and a new scientific and technological revolution and industrial transformation. Looking ahead, Xi identified building a modern industrial system as a major strategic task. He called for intelligent transformation, green transition, and integrated development, as well as stronger coordination along the industrial chain. President Xi also urged a reasonable share of manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, and new quality productive forces through deeper integration of scientific, technological, and industrial innovation. He also called for modern infrastructure and faster building of a new development paradigm, with the domestic economic cycle as the mainstay, stronger domestic demand, and better coordination between consumption and investment and between demand and supply. Xi urged strengthening the domestic cycle to support high standard opening up, expanding the international cycle to energize reform and development, and promoting mutual reinforcement between domestic and international markets. He also called for coordinated economic and social development, improved people's well-being, stronger grassroots governance, and better risk prevention.
And now before we close off, UNOMA invites eligible applicants to apply for special admission consideration for selected undergraduate degree programs for 2026. Now this applies to applicants who narrowly missed standard admission requirements but meet the specified point thresholds and subject criteria. Admission under this category is conditional, and students must meet set academic conditions by the end of the year to continue their studies. Special admission does not apply to professional or diploma programs. Details are available from the Office of the Register. With that being said, let's pause here now and sign out. Of course, up next is the Onkona Nadingi program brought to you by Matthias Angara. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, same radio frequency. Goodbye.